subject in a way that made it clear she never wanted it raised again. I wonder when Rhys will ride our way. He'll have to give his agreement on the way I settle this rebellion. I suppose he's already polishing a few nasty remarks to spoil his brother's victory. You can't know how hard it is for a woman to have two of her sons wrangling like this. Nevin, do you know why Rhys hates Rodri so much?
I don't. I wish I did. I'd put a stop to it.
This time Nevin wasn't merely putting Levian off with cryptic remarks. Over the years he'd done many meditations to discover if Rhys's hatred was part of the tangled chain of weird that Nevin and Rodri shared. It was no such thing, merely one of those irrational tempers that spring up between blood kin. At some point, Rhys and Rodri would have to resolve it, if not in this life, then in the next, but that, mercifully, would be no concern of his. There were other souls, of course, who were his concern, and that afternoon Nevin went to Cullen's chamber. He found Cullen dressed and out of bed, sitting on the carved chest by the window, with his left arm in a sling. Cullen was pale, and so gaunt that the dark circles under his eyes looked like pools of shadow, but he was mending nicely.
"How well will this blasted arm heal, do you think?"
Cullen asked.
"I truly don't know. We'll have to wait until we get the splints off. It was a clean break, and you were too sick at first to move it much, so there's hope."
"At least it wasn't my sword arm."
"Now here, are you still brooding about Rodri?"
"Don't be a dolt, Herb man. Jill's safe and that's an end to it."
Cullen looked idly out the window.
"But I've still got to eat along the long road."
So he did, and Nevin felt an odd pang of sympathy for his old enemy, whose very life depended on how well he could use sword and shield. A broken bone was a hard thing to mend, even for someone with his lore, simply because splints and strips of cloth and rabbit skin glue never really held the break perfectly immobile.
"Well," Nevin said at last, "at least you'll have all winter to recover. Rodri will certainly give you his shelter till spring."
"True spoken. Our young lord's got more honour than most. Will you be sheltering here too?"
"I will."
Nevin felt like adding,
"Cursed right I will."
He was going to be needed. Soon they would all be shut up together in a stormy Eldith winter, and he doubted if Jill and Rodri would be able to hide their love affair. After all, they were remembering a passion that they'd shared life after life, the memory close to the surface of their minds, when they'd merely found it but thought it new. Even without a shield, Cullen would be a very hard man for Rodri to best, especially when Eldith Law gave a father every right to kill the man who dishonored his daughter. The army stayed in Dunbrothlin for some days to bury the dead and let the wounded rest before the long journey home. Jill was pleased when, out of respect for the Dwayomer, Rodri had his men put Lovelane in a proper grave rather than throwing him in the trench with the other rebels. But then, everything that Rodri did pleased her, as if in her eyes he were a god come to walk among mortals. The memory of her knight in his arms haunted her. Rather than ending her hunger for him, it had made it worse, like trying to douse a fire with oil. Yet she kept her bargain and did her best to avoid him. Another thought haunted her constantly, too. What if Dar ever found out? Finally, the morning came when they would return to Dun Gwerbin. After she saddled her horse, Jill went to say farewell to Aderyn and the two elves, who were grinning at the prospect of leaving the lands of men for home.
"Here, Jill,"
Calendariel said.
"If ever you weary of Eldith, then ride west and find us. The wild folk will show you the way."
"My thanks. Truly that would gladden my heart to see you all again."
"Maybe someday you will,"
Aderyn said.
"And if not, think of me every now and then, and I'll do the same for you."
As they mounted their horses, Jill suddenly felt like weeping. She'd never known men she'd liked so well so fast.
"Someday I will ride west," she thought. "Someday."
Yet she felt a little coldness around her heart, from somehow knowing that the someday was a long time away, if it ever came at all. She waited at the edge of the camp until they'd ridden out of sight, then went back to her own people and to Rodri, waiting for her at the head of the army. On the day that the victorious army returned to Dungwerbin, Cullen sat by the window where he had a good view of the gates and the ward below. The day was wet, with a fine drizzle of rain that turned the cobbles below as clean and slick as metal, and the draught through the window was cold, but he kept his watch until at last he saw them filing in, the men wrapped in wool cloaks. At the head was Jill, riding a golden western hunter. Grinning in a gape of relief, Cullen leaned on the windowsill and watched as she dismounted, threw her reins to a servant, then ran for the broch. Cullen closed and barred the wooden shutters without a doubt that she was running to see him. In just a few minutes, Jill flung the door open and stepped in, pausing out of breath in the doorway.
"What did you do? Run all the way up?"
"I did, and if you're going to beat me, I want it over with."
Cullen laughed and held out his good arm to her.
"I'm still too weak to beat you, and I don't even want to. I'm so cursed glad to see you alive."
When she flung herself down next to him, he hugged her gingerly, aware of the ache down his side from the healing wound, then kissed her on the forehead. She gave him a smile as beautiful as the sun rising.
"Your old da's head is swollen these days, my sweet. So, my lass gained the honor of the day, did she? I saw that horse you rode in. Was it a gift from the Cavredoc?"
"It was."
Jill grinned at him.
"And after the battle I ate at the head of the honor table."
"Listen to you, you little hellcat."
Cullen gave her an affectionate squeeze.
"But I warn you, if I ever hear you talking about riding to another battle, I'll beat you so hard that you won't be able to sit on a horse."
"Don't trouble your heart, da."
Her smile was abruptly gone.
"Oh, it's splendid to sit here with you and share my glory, but I don't ever want to ride to war again."
"Well and good, then. I suppose you had to see for yourself and learn the hard way. You're too much like me to learn any other way."
When she laughed, he bent his head to kiss her, then realized that Nevin was standing in the open doorway and watching them with an oddly frightened expression, quickly stifled. Cullen let go of Jill and moved away. The old man's stare was a mirror, making him see an ugly, twisted thing that he'd hidden from himself until that moment.
"How do you fare?" Nevin said. "The Cavredoc wants to see you, but I wanted to make sure you weren't overtired."
"I'm fine."
"Indeed?"
Nevin raised one eyebrow.
"You look pale."
"I'm fine," Cullen snarled. "Jill, leave us alone."
"Da, I want to hear what his lordship says."
"I said go."
Like a kicked dog, she got up and slunk out of the room. Letting her go, knowing how much he'd hurt her, made his heart ache. He was afraid to look at Nevin.
"You know," the old man said, "there's more than one kind of battle that a man has to fight."
Cullen felt shame flood him like cold water. But mercifully, Nevin left without another word. Cullen leaned back against the shutters and felt himself shaking. As soon as he was well, he told himself, he was going to ride out and leave Jill behind under Levian's protection. It was going to hurt like poison, but it was best that way. He knew he could do it when the time came, 'cause he'd be doing it for her sake, and if he died in his next battle, somewhere far from Eldith, she'd never even have to know he was dead.
"Cullen?"
Rodri said. Cullen looked up with a start. He'd never even noticed the Lord come in.
"How do you fare? I can leave." "I'm fine, my lord."
Rodri had never looked more like a lord than he did that morning, in his soft shirt embroidered with red lions, his plaid thrown back from his shoulders and pinned at one side with a jeweled ring brooch, his hand on the hilt of his finely worked sword. But Cullen found himself thinking of him as a boy, and one he might have loved like a son. It was going to hurt to leave Rodri behind, too.
"Will you forgive me for taking Jill off to war?" Rodri said. "It ached my heart to let a lass do my fighting for me." "And who were you to argue with Dweilma? You know, my lord, ever since Jill was a little lass, all she ever talked about was getting a chance at battle glory. I'm not surprised she grabbed her chance when it came. She could always lie like a little weasel when she wanted summat." "Well, maybe so." Rodri looked sharply away. "But you truly do forgive me. It's been aching my heart, wondering what you thought of me." Here, lad, it doesn't become the noble-born to care one way or another what a dishonored man like me thinks of them.
Oh, horseshit. He must have been dishonored once, so you wouldn't be carrying that dagger, but what do I care what you did all those years ago? I came to offer you a place in my warband, and not just any place. I want you for my captain. It's not just me. Emir and the lads have been dropping hints, like, about how honored they'd be to ride behind you.
Oh, ye gods, I can't take that.
What? Why not?
It's just not fitting.
Nonsense. Rodri tossed his head. I even asked Sligan what he thought of the idea, and he said it was a cursed good one. You don't need to worry about my vassals looking down their noses at you or such like. Cullen opened his mouth, but no words came. He could never tell Rodri the real reason he wanted to ride away from the most generous lord he'd ever met.
Oh, by the hells, Cullen, are you truly going to say me nay? I'm not, my lord.
Well and good, then. We can leave all the kneeling and fine words for when you're better. Here, your face is white as snow. Let me help you up, captain. You'd better lie down. Cullen took the offered aid and made it safely back to his bed. After Rodri left, he lay there and stared at the ceiling. Rodri had handed him back the honour and decency he'd thought he'd lost forever, but he would know that he was unworthy, that everything was poisoned at the heart.
Jill. Jill, he thought. How could I? My own daughter.
He turned his face to the pillow and wept for the first time since he'd lain on Sir Rian's grave. And this time, too, he was weeping for her and for their daughter. After Cullen ordered her out of his chamber, Jill went down to the great hall in a sulk, but soon she realized that it was probably best that she be gone when Rodri and Cullen were together. Since the warbands were off tending their horses and the noble-born in conference with the Tyrin up in Sligan's sick room, the hall was deserted except for a serving lass, desultorily wiping the tables with a wet rag. Jill dipped herself a tankard of ale, then stood by the warband's hearth, where a peat fire smouldered against the chill. In a few minutes, Rodri came down the staircase and strode over to her. She loved watching the way he moved, with the graceful strength of a young panther. He made her a bow, then looked at her with eyes so hungry that she knew he was remembering their night together.
I've just spoken with Cullen. I made him the captain of my warband.
Did you do it for his sake or to keep me here?
For his sake.
Then I thank you from the bottom of my heart, my lord.
It hurts to hear you call me my lord.
Rodri looked down and scuffed at the floor with the toe of his boot.
But I'm mindful of our bargain. One night and no more.
Well and good, then.
Yet when they looked at each other, all she wanted was to throw her arms around him and kiss him, no matter who might see.
Mother's going to offer you a place in her retinue, Rodri said at last. Cursed if I'd have you waiting on table or chopping turnips out in the kitchen.
Would you offer me a place in your warband?
Do you want one? I will.
I don't. I just wanted to see what you'd say.
I'd give you anything you wanted if only I could. Ah, Jill, I'd marry you if they'd let me. I mean that. It's not just some weaseling words from a dishonorable man.
I know. And I'd marry you if I could.
Rodri's eyes filled with tears. He's like an elf indeed, Jill thought, but she felt like weeping herself. Irritably, he rubbed his eyes on his shirt sleeve and looked away.
Ah, ye gods, I respect your father so much. I think that hurts worst of all.
Rodri strode off, slamming out the door of the hall. For a moment, Jill thought of riding off alone as a silver dagger herself, but rationally she knew that she had to take Levian's offer. The long road had come to an end, here in Dun Guerbin, where she could live close to Rodri, but far, far away. All at once she wanted to be with her father. She refilled the tankard, then took it upstairs. When she came in, he was lying on his bed, and something about his eyes told her that he'd been weeping. She assumed he was touched by the honour just paid him.
"Is that ale for your old father?"
Cullen sat up and arranged a smile.
"My thanks."
"Lord Rodri told me how he honoured you," Jill handed him the tankard. "It's so splendid. It's about time someone recognized what kind of a man you are."
Cullen winced.
"Does that wound ache?"
"A bit. The ale will help."
Jill perched on the end of the bed and watched him drink. She felt that she never loved him more, her wonderful father, who had his pride back to match his glory. Later in the afternoon, Levian summoned Jill to the women's hall. The second floor of one of the secondary blocks, it was more a large suite than a hall, a sign that the tyrants of Dungwerbin could support their womenfolk in luxury. There were separate bedchambers for Levian's serving women, and a large half-round of a room with bar-deck carpets, little tables and carved and cushioned chairs in profusion. Levian greeted her warmly and led her to a chair, while Medilla offered her a plate of honeyed apricots, and Danyan poured her a goblet of pale bar-deck wine.
"I must say I never thought I'd have to thank a lass for saving my son's life," Levian said, "but I do thank you, and from the bottom of my heart."
"Her grace is more than welcome, and truly you've offered me more repayment than I deserve."
"Nonsense. You have so much to learn about life in a court, of course, but I'm sure you'll do splendidly. The first thing we have to do is sew you some proper dresses."
Jill's dismay must have shown on her face because the three of them laughed gently at her.
"Oh, come now," Danyan said. "You can't go around dressed like a lad."
"Besides," Medilla broke in, "you're so pretty, child. Once your hair grows and we've gotten you all turned out, why, you'll have lads clustering around you like bees round a rose bush."
Jill stared blankly at her.
"Child," Levian said, "is summat wrong?"
"Well, Your Grace, I mean no disrespect, but don't you all remember that I've killed two men?"
They went as still as if they'd been turned to stone by Dwayoma. Only then did Jill realize just how completely her one victorious battle had set her apart from other women. Not even the powerful Levian would ever know what she knew, the bitter tangled glory of wagering your life against another's and winning.
"So you have," Levian said at last.
"I was assuming that you'd want to put all that behind you." "I do, Your Grace, but I can't. Not so easily, anyway."
Jill began to feel like a horse in a bedchamber.
"I mean no insult. Truly I don't."
"Of course not, child, and none's taken," Levian said. "But true enough, chatter about lads and pretty clothes isn't going to amuse you the way it used to amuse the three of us. This is very interesting, Jill. Have you ever thought of marrying, by the way?"
"I haven't, Your Grace. Who would I have married without a dowry? Some tavern man?"
"True spoken, but that's all changed now."
Levian gave her a good-humoured smile.
"Your beauty and my favour are dowry enough for any lass. There's many a rising young merchant who'd admire a wife with your spirit, and for that matter, many a landless noble lord who needs my goodwill. You wouldn't be the first woman to win a title with her looks."
"I see. But if you don't want to marry," Danyan broke in, "no one will force you into it either. It's just that most lasses do." "My thanks, but this is all so sudden. I don't know what to think."
"Of course," Levian said. "There's no hurry."
Although all of them smiled at her, Jill realized that they were looking on her as a strange kind of invalid, a victim who needed nursing back to health. She began to feel like a falcon indeed, used to soaring at the edge of the wilderness, but now caught and brought back to hunt at a lord's command. Since Levian practically ordered her to, Jill agreed to wear women's clothes down to dinner that night. As pleased as if they had a new daughter, Medilla and Danyan fussed over Jill. She had a bath with perfumed soap, dried herself off on thick bar-deck towels, then submitted to having Medilla comb her hair before she dressed. First came the narrow white underdress, with tight sleeves, then a blue overdress, hanging full from gathered shoulders. Around her waist, a kirtle of Levian's plaid tucked the dress in and made pockets of a sort with its folds, enough to carry a table dagger and a handkerchief. Although Medilla offered her a tiny jeweled dagger, Jill insisted on carrying her own. In spite of all the honour of being treated this way, there were limits to what she'd put up with. She took a few steps and nearly tripped. The underdress was far too narrow for her usual stride.
"Poor Jill," Danyan said with honest sympathy. "Well, you'll get used to it in a bit."
Alternately mincing and stumbling, Jill followed them down to the great hall, where Levian was already seated at the head of the honour table. Since they would have to await Rhys's final judgment on the war, all of Rodri's noble-born allies were there, except, of course, for the wounded Sliggan. The lords rose and bowed rather absently to Her Grace's women. Then Eddar laughed aloud.
"Jill, I swear I didn't recognize you."
"I hardly recognize myself, my lord."
Jill took a place at the foot of the table between Medela and Danyan. Although everyone was waiting for Rodri, he never came in, and eventually a somewhat annoyed Lavian had the meal served without him. Jill had to pay strict attention to her manners and constantly remind herself that she couldn't wipe her hands on her borrowed dress. She aped Medilla and Danyan and ate using only her fingertips, which she could dabble clean on the handkerchief hanging from her kirtle. The meal was nearly finished when a page hurried to the table to announce Lord Kinven, the first of Corbin's allies, come to sue for peace. As befitted the ritual of the thing, he came alone and completely unarmed, with not so much as a table dagger in his belt, and he knelt before Lavian like a common rider. The entire hall fell silent as Lavian coolly considered him. The noble-born leaned forward, Eddar with a tight twist of contempt to his mouth, the rest expressionless.
"I've come to beg for your forgiveness and your pardon," Kinven said, his voice choking on his shame, "for raising my sword in rebellion against you. This is a grave thing you ask of me. What restitution do you offer?" 20 horses, coin for my share of Lueth for Dalmir and all men dead, and my little son to live in your dun as hostage."
Although Jill was thinking that this sounded a small fee for so much trouble, Lavian nodded.
"If the Gwerbret approves these terms, I shall take them. No doubt you're hungry after your long ride. You may sit with my men and a servant will feed you."
Kinven winced, but as a sign of submission he did it, taking a place at the end of one of the riders' tables. They all ignored him, looking through him as if he were made of glass. As the general chatter picked up again, Jill turned to whisper to Danyan.
"Why did Our Lady let him off so lightly? He's a poor lord as it is. He'll have to borrow from every cousin he has just to pay the lith, and if Our Lady made his clan destitute, they'd rise in rebellion some fine day."
"Besides," Medilla put in, "by being so generous, she shamed him good and proper. That'll sting worse than the coin."
The two nodded sagely at each other. Jill realized that they were going to be her guides and teachers in this new world, where intrigue was as dangerous as 1,000 swords. As soon as possible, Jill left the table and went to look in on her father. As she made her way down the corridor, she heard laughter coming from his chamber, and when she opened the door, she saw Rodri sharing a meal with Cullen. The sight of them together made her freeze, her hand on the open door, as they both turned to look at her. The lantern light seemed to swell into the glow of a fire, picking out the glitter of the silver dagger in Cullen's hand.
"Well, by the gods," Cullen said, "this fine lady can't be my scruffy little silver dagger's brat."
"Dad, don't tease. I'm miserable enough as it is."
She allowed herself one glance at Rodri.
"I'll leave you to your talk with your captain, my lord."
"My thanks," Rodri said.
Jill stepped out and shut the door behind her. Only then did she realize that she was terrified, just from seeing Cullen and Rodri together, as if in some mad way she thought they were plotting about her behind her back. 7 days passed without a word from Gwerbret Rhys, who would have to oversee the judgments Lavian made upon her rebel lords. Rodri was furious, seeing the delay as a slap at him, a perception no one bothered to deny. Jill's presence in the dun was another constant torment. He simply couldn't keep his mind off her, and seeing her was worse, making him remember their night together, the first time he'd ever had a woman who could match him in bed. He took to spending as much time as possible alone, going for long rides, or merely walking out in the ward. During one of these aimless rambles, he ran across Cullen, down by the back wall of the dun. Although his left arm was still in a sling, Cullen was working out with one of the light wooden swords used to train young boys. Moving so slowly that it was a kind of dance, Cullen was lunging and falling back while he described a figure eight with the point of the blade in a perfect concentration that was more like a dwayoma than swordplay. Even sore and weak, Cullen was a marvel when he moved with a weapon in his hand. Finally, he noticed that Rodri was watching him and stopped to make him a bow.
How does your arm fare? Rodri said.
Not too badly, my lord. Maybe tomorrow we'll get the splints off for a look, the herbman tells me.
Cullen glanced around, then pointed at a second wooden sword that was leaning against the wall.
Ever tried to spar this slowly?
I haven't.
Rodri took the sword.
Looks like a good game.
To keep things fair, Rodri tucked his left arm behind his back. The sparring seemed like a humorous parody of real combat at first, with both of them moving like men in a trance. It was a matter of moving in slowly, catching the other's blade in a parry, then ever so slowly breaking free to glide in again from another direction. Yet it was difficult, too. Rodri had never been so aware of every subtle move he made when he was fighting, and of every move his opponent was making as well. Keeping his concentration so finely honed was a struggle. Finally, his mind wandered a little too far, and Cullen slipped slowly under his guard and flicked his shirt with the blunt point of his sword.
By the hells, Rodri said, a touch, sure enough.
Cullen smiled and saluted him with the wooden sword, but all at once Rodri felt that he was in danger, that wooden or not, that blade could kill him in Cullen of Caermore's hands, and that Cullen was thinking just that.
Summat wrong, my lord.
Naught. Here, you've done enough for one day.
So I have. It gripes my heart to admit it, but I'm tired. Ah well, I'll get my strength back soon enough.
Again, Rodri felt a shudder of danger, as if Cullen were giving him a warning. Had he noticed the way Rodri had been looking at Jill? If he'd been obvious, Cullen might well have. Rodri wanted to say something reassuring, some good plausible lie to put Cullen at ease, but he was just sensible enough to realize that he'd best not speak Jill's name where her father could hear it.
"It looks remarkably good," Nevin said. "I'm pleased."
Cullen was glad that the herbman was pleased, because to him his once broken arm looked bad, white flesh, puckered and wrinkled, and far thinner than his other arm after the long weeks in the splints.
"The break mended fairly straight," the old man went on. "It should be good enough for shield work if you're careful about building it up. Favor it for some time."
"My thanks, truly, for all your work on me."
"You're most welcome."
Nevin paused, consideringly.
"Truly, you are."
Now that his wounds were fully healed, it was time for Cullen to formally take Rodri's service. That very night, before everyone in the dun assembled in the great hall, he knelt at Rodri's feet. Rodri leaned forward in his chair and took both of Cullen's hands in his. By the flaring torchlight, Cullen could see how solemn the young lord looked. It was a grave thing they were doing.
"And will you serve me truly all your life?" Rodri said. "I will. I'll fight for you and die with you if need be. Then may every bard in the kingdom mock and shame me if I ever treat you unjustly, or if ever I'm miserly to you."
Rodri took a comb from a waiting page and made the ritual strokes through Cullen's hair to seal the bargain. As Cullen rose to the cheering of the warband, he felt strangely light and free, even though he'd just pledged his life away. The thought was puzzling, but he somehow knew that he had just repaid a debt. Now that he was officially the captain of the Tyrant's warband, Cullen was back in the barracks, but he had a chamber of his own over the tack room, not over the horses, with a proper bed, a chest for his clothes, and, the biggest luxury of all, a hearth of his own. When he moved in, Amir carried up his saddlebags and bedroll, and Praeth brought an armload of firewood. Two prudent moves to curry favour with the man who had the power to discipline them with a whip if need be. Cullen hung his new shield, blazoned with the red lion, up on the wall, and decided that he'd unpacked.
"Well and good, lads. We'll be taking the horses out soon. I want to see how well you all sit on a horse, now that I'm not distracted by little things like Dweomer."
The two riders allowed themselves small smiles.
"Captain," Amir said, "are you and Lord Rodri going to start finding new men soon?"
"Cursed right. We're badly under strength."
They were, truly, because out of the 50 men Rodri had had at Dun Cannobane, only 17 were left, and out of the 50 from Dun Gwerbin, only 32. Yet Cullen knew that soon enough, young men would show up at the gates to beg for a place in the warband. Not for them to worry that places were open because of so many bloody deaths. They would want the honour enough to ignore such an inconvenient fact. the honour, the chance at glory, and at root, the freedom from the drudgery of their father's farm or craft shop. That very afternoon, when Cullen went down to the ward to exercise, three of the spearmen from Canabain asked him if they could join.
"At least you know what a war's like. I'll speak to Lord Rodri for you."
And they were grateful, sincerely and deeply grateful, that such an important man as he would do them a favour. Rodri was gone from the great hall, and the pages had no idea of where he was. Cullen searched the ward, and finally, as he passed by a storage shed, he heard Rodri's voice and a woman's giggle. Jill. Cullen felt that he'd been turned into a tree and taken root on the spot. He'd been a fool to take Rodri's offer. Jill was very beautiful, and Rodri already had sired one bastard, hadn't he? Since he couldn't quite hear what they were saying, he cautiously edged around the shed until he could just see them, standing between a stack of firewood and the dun wall. They were a decent space apart, but they were smiling at each other with such absorption that they never looked up and saw him. Cullen's hand sought his sword hilt of its own will, but he forced it away. He'd sworn a solemn oath to Rodri, and later he'd have a talk with Jill. As he walked away, he saw Nevin coming toward him.
"Looking for me?" Cullen said.
"For Jill, actually. Her Grace wants her."
"She's back there."
Cullen jerked his thumb in her general direction.
"Talking with Rodri."
Nevin's eyes narrowed as he studied Cullen's face. Cullen stared right back, a battle of wills that Nevin eventually won when Cullen could no longer bear to look at the man who knew full well the cause of his jealousy.
"Tell my lord I need a word with him, will you?"
He walked off, leaving Nevin to think what he would. Amid piles of chainmail and racked swords in the shed that did Dungwerbin for an armory, Cullen was just taking down a practice sword when Rodri caught up with him.
"My lord, three of the Canabain spearmen want to ride for you. They claim to know summat about swordcraft. Try them out. If you think they'll do, I'll take them on. You can make that a general principle, truly. I trust your judgment of a man." "My thanks."
For a long, painful moment, they merely looked at each other. Since Cullen had never been given to pondering his feelings and considering subtleties, he began to feel as if he were drowning. How could he both admire Rodri and hate him this way? It was because of Jill, but it was more than Jill. He simply couldn't understand. His enraged bafflement must have been obvious because Rodri grew more and more uneasy. Yet he too couldn't seem to break away, and the silence grew so thick it was painful.
"Cullen," Rodri said at last, "you know I honour you." "I do, my lord, and you have my thanks." "Well then."
Rodri turned idly away and seemed to be examining a nearby sword rack.
"Would I do somewhat that would cause you grief?"
"Somewhat." As palpably as if she'd walked in the door, Cullen felt Jill's presence between them.
"Well," Rodri said, "do you hold me in such low esteem as all that?" "I don't, my lord. If I did, I wouldn't be riding for you." "Well and good, then. Here, do you remember when I asked you to play Carnowick with me?" "I do, and truly I never thought we'd live to do it." "But we have. Tonight I'll bring a board over to your table and we'll have a game."
After Rodri left, Cullen stood in the shed for a long time, the wooden sword in his hands, and wished that he were better at thinking. On the long road he'd seen more courts from the underside than any man in the kingdom, and never had he met a lord like Rodri, so much what every lord was supposed to be, but so few were. If only it weren't for Jill. If only. He swore aloud and went out to the practice ground to work his frustrations away. Cullen worked a little too hard. By the time he realized that he had to stop, his head was swimming. By walking slowly and concentrating on every step, he reached his chamber without having to ask for help, and flopped onto the bed, boots, sword belt and all. When he woke, Jill was standing beside his bed, and the slanting light through the window told him it was close to sunset.
"What are you doing here?" Cullen snapped. "You shouldn't be anywhere near the barracks."
"Oh, I know. And I hate it, Dar. I miss you. We hardly get a chance to talk these days."
When Cullen sat up, rubbing his face and yawning, Jill sat down next to him. In her new dresses, she looked so much like her mother that he wanted to weep.
"Well, my sweet, I miss you too, but you're a fine lady now.
No, horseshit. Levian can heap honours on me all she wants, but I'll always be a common born, and a bastard.
She spoke so bitterly that even Cullen could catch this subtle point.
Rodri will never marry you, truly, and you'd best keep that in mind when you're giggling and flirting with him.
Jill went pale and still, clutching a handful of blanket.
I've seen the pair of you looking at each other like hounds at a joint of meat. Stay away from him. He's an honorable man, but you wouldn't be the first beautiful woman that made a man desert his honor.
Jill nodded, her mouth working in honest pain. Cullen felt torn in pieces. He was sincerely sorry for her, that she'd never have the man she loved, and at the same time he wanted to slap her just because she loved another man.
Come along.
Cullen stood up.
You're not a barracks brat any more, and you can't be hanging around here.
Cullen strode out, leaving Jill to follow. Yet her words haunted him that evening, that she loved him, that she missed him. He wondered how he would feel if she married some man the tyrant picked out for her, and she went off to live with her new husband. He would probably never see her but once or twice a year. He even had the thought of simply leaving Rotary's service and going back on the long road, where he would neither know nor care where Jill was sleeping. But as he sat in the captain's place at the head table of the warband, he knew that he could never give up his newfound position. For the first time in his life, he had something to lose. Later, after the warbands drifted back to the barracks and the noble lords up to their chambers, Rodri brought over a game of Carnowick, the finest set Cullen had ever seen. The playing pieces were flat, polished stones, white and black. The thin ebony board was inlaid with mother-of-pearl to mark the starting stations and the track, 16 interwoven triangles, so that even in firelight it was easy to follow.
"I'll wager you beat me soundly," Rodri said.
Cullen did, too, for the first three games, sweeping Rodri's men off the board as fast as the young lord put them on. Swearing under his breath, Rodri began pondering every move he made and gave Cullen a harder run for it, but still he lost the next three. By then, only one drowsy servant remained in the hall to refill their tankards. Rodri sent the man to bed, stopped drinking, and finally, after four more games, ran Cullen to a draw.
"I won't press my luck any more tonight," Rodri said.
"It wasn't luck. You're learning."
Cullen felt the simple comfort of it as overwhelming. Here they were, two men who'd given themselves up for dead, safe at home by a fire, with plenty of ale in each other's company. While Rodri put the game back in its lacquered box, Cullen got up and fetched more ale. They drank silently at first, and slowly, making the moment last as the fire died down and shadows filled the hall. Cullen suddenly realized that he was happy, a word that had never had much meaning for him before. Or he would be happy, if it weren't for Jill, whom he loved too much, but loved truly enough to want her to be happy, too. Maybe it was the ale, maybe it was the late hour, but he suddenly thought of the clear and simple way to solve the whole tangled mess. If he could do it, if he could bear to do it. All unconsciously, Rodri gave him the opening he needed, the chance to think about what had seemed so unthinkable before.
"I wish Rhys would get himself here. Oh well, in a way, he's doing me somewhat of a favour. As soon as the rebellion's settled, my esteemed mother's going to put all her boundless energies into marrying me off." "It's about time you did, my lord." "I know. The cursed Ran needs its cursed heirs. Ye gods, captain, think how I must feel. How would you like to be put to stud like a prize horse?"
Cullen laughed aloud.
"Aches a man's heart, doesn't it?" Rodri said, grinning. "And for all I know, she'll have a face and a temper to match the Lord of Hells. It's her cursed kin that count, not what I might think of her." "Ha! I see why the priests are always telling a man never to envy the noble-born. And right they are, truly. Men like me marry to please our clans, not ourselves."
The old proverb struck an odd place in Cullen's mind, some long-buried memory that he couldn't quite get clear. He had a long swallow of ale and considered his peculiar idea. He could think of no way to broach it subtly.
"Tell me summat, my lord. Would you marry my Jill if you could?"
Rodri went so tense that Cullen realized that the lad was as afraid of him as Jill was. It was gratifying. Common born or not, he was still Jill's father, still the man who'd decide what she would or wouldn't do.
"I would," Rodri said at last. "I'll swear that to you on the honour of the Maelwiths. I've never wanted anything as much as I want to marry her. But I can't. I know that."
They drank for a few minutes more, and Rodri never looked away from his face.
"You know, my lord, the mistress of a great lord has a cursed lot of power in his ran and court."
Rodri jerked his head as if Cullen had slapped him.
"So she does, and no one would dare mock her either. Provided she was never cast off to her shame. There are some women who would never have to fear such a thing."
"Good." Absently, Cullen laid his hand on his sword hilt.
"Good."
They sat together drinking, never saying a word, until the fire was so low that they could barely see each other's face. Perhaps the thing that Jill hated most about being in a lady's retinue was that she had to learn to sew. For all that Levian was a rich tyrant, most of the clothing worn in the dun was made there, and she owed every rider in her warband and every servant in her hall 2 pairs of shirts and brigger or 2 dresses a year as part of their maintenance. Every woman in the dun, from the lowliest kitchen wench to Danyan and Medela, spent part of her time producing this mountain of clothes. Even Levian took a hand and sewed Rodri's shirts for him, as well as embroidering the blazons on the shirts for her skilled servitors, such as the bard. Since there was a definite honour among women about the fineness of their sewing, Jill dutifully practised, but she hated every clumsy stitch she made. That morning, Nevin came to the women's hall, which was open to him because of his great age, and, while she worked, entertained her with tales of Bardek, that mysterious country far across the southern sea. From the wealth of details, it was plain that he'd spent much time there.
"Studying physic, truly," Nevin admitted when she asked him. "They have much curious lore in Bardek, and most of it's worth knowing. It's a cursed strange place."
"So it sounds. I wish I could see it some day, but it's not likely now."
"Here, child, you sound very unhappy."
"I am, and I feel like the most ungrateful wretch in the world, too. Here, Her Grace has been so generous to me, and I'm living in more luxury than I ever dreamt of, but I feel like a falcon in a cage."
"Well, in a way you are trapped."
It was such a relief to hear someone agree with her that Jill nearly wept. Irritably, she threw the sewing into her wicker work basket.
"Well, if you truly hate this kind of life," Nevin went on, "perhaps you should leave it."
"What can I do? Ride the roads as a silver dagger?"
"I should think not, but many a woman has a craft. If I spoke to the tyrant, she'd pay the prentice fee for you."
"Oh, and what sort of thing would I do? I'd hate to spin or sew or such like, and no armourer or weapon master would take a woman as an apprentice, not even if the tyrant asked them."
"There are all sorts of crafts."
All at once Jill remembered that he was Dweomer. He was so kind to her, so bent on winning her friendship, that at times she forgot this frightening truth. The grey gnome looked up from the floor where he'd been amusing himself by tangling her embroidery threads, and gave her a gaping grin.
"My lord," Jill said, her voice shaking, "you honour me too highly if you think I could take up your craft."
"Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But it's a closed issue if you don't want it. I was merely thinking about herbcraft, the plain and simple medicine I know. I've learned a lot in my long years, and it would be a pity to let the knowledge die with me."
"Well, so it would."
Suddenly Jill felt her first real hope in days.
"And you travel everywhere and live the way you want?"
"Just that, and you're bright enough to learn the lore. Levian will understand, truly, if you want to leave. She'll know you'll be safe with me."
"But what about Dar? I doubt me if he'd let me go with you, and truly we've been through so much together, him and me, that I'd hate to leave him too."
"No doubt. But at some time you have to leave him."
Although Nevin spoke quietly, his words cut like a knife.
"Well, why?" Jill snapped. "If I stay here..."
"And aren't you the one who was just telling me you're miserable?"
"Oh, So I was.
Just think about it. You don't have to decide straight away.
Nevin left her to the tedious task of untangling the skeins that the gnome had ruined. As she worked, Jill thought over his offer. Oddly enough, she could see herself wandering the roads with a mule and dispensing herbs to farmers much more easily than marrying some minor lord and living in comfort. While it would hurt to leave Cullen, she could always come back and see him whenever she felt like it. It would hurt much less than being shut up in the dun with Rodri and his new wife, seeing him every day, and knowing that another woman had what was beyond her reach. Or so Jill thought of him that morning, as beyond her reach. Toward evening she went out into the ward just for some fresh air, and Rodri followed her, catching her out by the wall among the storage sheds.
"My lord should be more careful about chasing after me," Jill said. "What if someone saw you?"
"I don't give a pig's fart if they did or not. I've got to talk with you. Let's find a place where we can be alone."
"Oh, indeed. It's not talk that's on your mind."
"It is and it isn't. What of it?"
Rodri smiled at her so softly that Jill followed him when he went round to a shed to a private place in the curve of the wall.
"This will do for now," Rodri said.
The word seemed to stick in his throat.
Well, he started again. "You see, I mean, that sounds so cursed cold."
"You haven't said much yet that sounded like anything."
"I know. Well, it's about that bargain we made, truly."
"I thought as much. I meant what I said, curse you."
"Things have changed, Summit. I..."
And he stuck there again, looking at her with a feeble, foolish smile. In sheer irritation, Jill started to walk away, but he grabbed her by the shoulders. When she swung round to break his hold, she tripped over the hem of her dress and nearly fell into his arms. He laughed and kissed her, held her tight when she tried to squirm away, and kissed her again so sweetly that she threw her arms around his neck and kissed him, clung to him, while she remembered all the pleasure his kisses promised.
"Leave your chamber door unbarred tonight," Rodri said.
"You dolt! If someone catches you, the news will be all over the dun."
"Who's going to be up in the middle of the night but me?"
He kissed her softly, letting his mouth linger on hers.
"Just leave the door unbarred."
When Jill shoved him away, he grinned at her.
"I know you'll do it," Rodri said. "Till tonight, my lady."
In a fury of lust and rage both, Jill hiked up her skirts and ran, turning round the shed and nearly running straight into Cullen. She yelped aloud in terror. He must have heard, must have seen. He set his hands on his hips and looked at her so mildly that she was sure she was in for the worst beating of her life.
"Da, I'm sorry," Jill stammered.
"And so you might be, carrying on like a serving wench where anyone might see you."
"I won't do it again, promise."
"Good. You've got a chamber for that sort of thing, don't you?"
Jill's head reeled as badly as if he had slapped her. Cullen gave her the barest sort of smile and walked past, calling out to Rodri to wait for him. The two of them went off together, discussing some new men for the warband.
"So that's what Rodri wanted to tell me. Oh, by the goddess herself!"
She felt betrayed. Jill stood there for a long time and considered it, that while she might have been pleased, she felt betrayed. Cullen had handed her over to Rodri to be his mistress, just handed her over like a horse, and she wanted Rodri too much to protest. At that moment she saw clearly what her life would become, caught between the two of them, loving them both yet kept away from both. Rodri would have his wife and Cullen the warband. She would be important to them, in her way, rather like a valuable sword that they would never use in battle, only hang on a chamber wall to be taken down and admired once in a while.
"I can't do that," she told herself. "I won't."
Yet she knew that she could and that she would. The bars of her cage were made out of love, and they would keep her in for all her gnawing at them. All evening, Jill debated the question of whether Rodri would find her door open or barred. She decided that she should hold out and make him realize that he would have to court her, that she wasn't a bit of battle loot to be distributed by her father. When she went to bed that night, she barred the door, but she couldn't sleep, and slowly, a bit at a time, her resolve wore away like sand under a storm tide. She cursed herself for a slut or worse, then got up and lifted the wooden bar free of the staples. She stood there for a moment, barred it again, then lifted it off and left it off. She stripped off her nightdress, lay down, and felt her heart pounding in the darkness. Not more than a few moments later, he came to her, as sure-footed and silent as a thief.
"Just once, my love," he whispered. "I'd like to have you in the light. I want to see what your face looks like when we've done."
Jill giggled and threw the blankets back. He took off his clothes and slipped in next to her. At the touch of his naked body on hers, she forgot every worry she'd ever had about honor and betrayal, but she pretended to shove him away. He grabbed her wrists and kissed her until she struggled free, then he caught her again. They wrestled with each other as much as they caressed each other, until at last she could wait no longer and let him win, pressing her down, catching her, filling her with an aching, fiery pleasure that made her sob in his arms. Since Nevin never slept more than 4 hours a night, he was up late that evening, brooding over the Dark Master and his peculiar plot. For all his scrying on the etheric, he'd found no further traces of the enemy, and neither had any other Dwayoma master in the kingdom. He was just thinking that it was late enough for even him to be in bed when Jill's grey gnome popped into manifestation on the table. The little creature was furious, making soundless snarls and pulling at its hair as it danced up and down.
"Now, now, now! What's all this?"
The gnome grabbed his hand and pulled, as if it were trying to haul him to his feet.
"What? You want me to come with you?"
The gnome nodded a vigorous yes and pulled on him again.
"Is summat wrong with Jill?"
At that, the gnome leapt into its final dance of fury. Nevin lit a lantern and followed the gnome as it led him toward the women's quarters. As soon as the gnome realized that he was going to go to Jill's chamber, it disappeared. Holding the lantern low, Nevin turned down the main corridor and met Rodri, barefoot, tousled, and obviously very tired. Rodri squeaked like a caught burglar, and Nevin collared him like one.
"You little dolt," Nevin hissed.
"I just couldn't sleep, just taking a bit of air."
"Ha! Come along, lad."
Nevin marched Rodri back to his chamber, which was some ways away on the floor above the women's quarters, and shoved him through the door. Rodri sank into a chair and looked up, bleary-eyed. His lips were swollen.
"How by every god did you know I was in Jill's bed?"
"How do you think I knew, dolt?"
Rodri squeaked and flinched back.
"I'm not going to blast you with Dwayoma fires or such like," Nevin said with some asperity. "Tempted though I might be, all I want you to do is think. You won't be able to keep this midnight trysting a secret forever. As the saying goes, fine dresses can't hide a big belly. What will Cullen do then, pray tell?"
"Naught. We've had words about it, and he let me know that Jill's mine as long as I treat her as well as a great lord's mistress deserves."
Nevin felt like a man who's drawn his sword with a flourish only to find it broken off at the hilt.
"Truly, I couldn't believe my ears either."
Rodri did look sincerely amazed.
"But he did say it. I swear to you that I'll always treat her well. Ah, ye gods, Nevin, can't you understand how much I love her? You must have been young once. Didn't you ever love a woman this much?"
Nevin was caught speechless by the irony of the thing. So he had. The same one. Unceremoniously, Nevin kicked the heir to the Tyrinrin out of his chamber and barred the door behind him. He sat down in the chair and ran his fingers idly over the rough wood of the table edge. Jill's gnome appeared, all smiles and bows.
"I'm sorry, my friend. You'll have to put up with this, just like I will."
The gnome hissed and disappeared. Nevin was just as heartsick. She was gone from him in this life, as she'd gone in so many others. He was sure of it. All the amusement and crises of a great court would fill her mind and her time until her latent Dwayoma talents faded away. He could see it all. Although Rodri's wife would have to accept his mistress, she would come to hate Jill when the various vassals paid their court to Jill, not to her. The fight would come to the surface when Jill had a couple of Rodri's bastards and was trying to get them settled in good positions. No doubt Rodri would favour Jill's children too, making his wife hate her more than ever. None of this would leave any place for the Dwayoma. Nevin's first impulse was to leave the dun that very night and ride far away. but Jill would need him. For all the pain of seeing his vow go unfulfilled for yet another long stretch of years, he would stay, simply because she needed him. For a moment, Nevin felt so odd that he didn't know what was wrong with him. Then he realized that for the first time in 100 years, he was weeping. When the 10th day passed with no word from Vrys, Lovian was furious enough to dispense with formalities and send a message to him. Although she carefully phrased the letter in humble and courtly terms, at root she told him the entire Tyrinarin would be in upheaval unless he cursed well did something about it. When the scribe read it to her impatient vassals, they cheered. "You have my sympathy, my lords," Lovian said to them. "We'll see if a mother's words can prod the Gwerbret to action." Lovian left them to discuss her letter and went up to the women's hall. As a child, she had played there at her mother's side, and the familiar room was still a comfortable refuge, even though she was the lord of the Dun now, not its lady. When she came in, she found Danyan trying to help Jill with her sewing.
"Shall I fetch her grace some wine?" Jill said.
"Anything to get out of the needlework," Lovian said with a smile. "You may lay it aside if you wish, Jill, but truly I don't want anything at the moment." Jill threw her practice piece into the workbasket with such fury that Lovian and Danyan both laughed at her. "Here, Dan," Lovian said. "It's truly time you put some thought into getting Rodri married."
"True enough," Danyan said. "I've been thinking about the Gwerbret of Camin Wayne's younger daughter. With Rhys and Rodri always feuding, it would be wise to give the Tyrin some connections with another Gwerbretian."
"Now that's an excellent point, and she's a level-headed lass." Jill went as still as a hunted animal. A number of things Lovian had noticed all came together in her mind.
"Oh, Jill, my sweet," Lovian said. "You're not in love with my wretched son, are you?"
For an answer, Jill blushed scarlet.
"You poor child," Lovian said. "You have all my sympathy, but Jill, I can never let you marry Rodri."
"I'm more than aware of that, Your Grace," Jill said, and she was in perfect control of every word. "Besides, I have no doubt at all that Lord Rodri is going to make his wife a very bad husband."
It was so perfectly done that Lovian was impressed.
"I see."
Lovian gave her a pleasant little nod.
"I'm glad that you're such a sensible lass."
Lovian and Danyan exchanged a glance, then changed the subject. Later they sent Jill off on an errand and discussed the matter, agreeing that whether she could sew or not, Jill was going to fit very well into the court. Without an open word being said, they now knew who Rodri's mistress was, and they could pick his wife accordingly. Since Lovian knew that Nevin had an interest in Jill, she made a point of discussing the matter with him privately. As she expected, Nevin was disappointed, but he seemed resigned.
"After all, I'll see her often in your dun."
"Of course, as long as things sit well with you."
"Oh, here, lover, what have you been thinking, that I was an old ram about to make a fool of myself over a young you?"
Lovian felt her cheeks colouring, but Nevin was far more amused than insulted.
"I assure you," he went on, "that I'm more aware than most of the years I carry. I'm fond of Jill, but truly my main interest in her is her raw Dwayoma talent."
"Of course. It's very odd, but it's so hard to keep in mind that you're Dwayoma, that anyone can be Dwayoma, truly. And here I saw Jill have that vision of hers."
"Well, the mind shrinks from what it can't understand. I heard your bard practicing his praise song about the war. He's reporting very faithfully what happened. Do you think anyone will believe a word of it in, say, 50 years?
"They won't. A typical bard song, they'll say, full of lies and fancies. And you know, maybe it's just as well."
3 days later, the message finally came from Vrys. Lovian had an odd premonition about it and decided to read it privately rather than have it read aloud in the open hall. She'd made the right decision.
"My Lady Mother," it ran, "forgive me for the delay in attending to your important affairs. I have been investigating the matter of this war in order to ascertain whether Lord Rodri's report was in the least accurate. I am summoning him and his allies to Aberwyn to give me an account of their conduct. You, of course, are most welcome to my meat and mead, and we shall settle matters then. Your humble son, Rhys, Gwerbret Aberwyn."
You little beast, Levian said aloud. You're certainly Tinga's son, aren't you?
Nevin was more than pleased when Levian asked him to join her entourage for the trip to Aberwyn. He even allowed her to provide him with a new shirt and decent brigger so that he could pass inconspicuously as one of her counselors.